Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us today. It's another installment in our series of Conversations with the Candidates. My guest is Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski, Jr. After prevailing in a tight Democratic primary race in 2018, in which he beat former State Senator James Brochen by 17 votes, he won election as county executive that year and again in 2022 by very comfortable margins. He has now decided to run for Congress in the 2nd District for a seat that's currently held by 11-term Representative Dutch Ruppersberger, who will retire when his current term ends. Mr. Olszewski has had a full plate of issues to contend with as county executive, and as we have talked about those issues regularly here on Midday since he took office, we'll talk about some of those issues again today through the hour, but I want to be clear that Mr. Olszewski's appearance on Midday today is in his capacity as a candidate in the District 2 congressional primary, where he is one of 6 Democrats on the ballot. 3 Republicans are also seeking their party's nod for the nomination. Johnny Olszewski is also currently the president of the board of MACO, the Maryland Association of Counties. He served in the Maryland House of Delegates from 2006 until 2015 as well. Mr. Olszewski, known as Johnny O, is a graduate of Goucher College. He holds a master's degree from George Washington University and a doctorate in public policy from UMBC. He is 41 years old. He and his wife and young daughter live on Miller's Island. If you have a question for the county executive, we'll start with emails and we'll move to calls a little later in the show. Our email address here at Midday, midday@wypr.org. Mr. County Executive, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Tom, always good to be in. Thanks for having us in today.
So, of the candidates in this primary race, you have far and away the most government experience. It's not unusual for candidates without government experience for whatever race, mayor or anything else, come in to tell me, you know, I'm not a politician. Mm-hmm. I'm not a career politician, mm-hmm. as if that's a good thing. I often joke that, you know, sometimes I say, well, does that mean you're not like Ben Cardin or, you know, Paul Sarbanes? And that's when they learn how to pivot. But explain your philosophy about what makes government experience matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, again, thanks for having us on. I'll say I'm really excited about this race because it is an opportunity to talk about not just what the experience that we have is, but also what that has meant. And so I would say that, you know, government experience is certainly a benefit if you can also articulate how you have leveraged that to improve the lives of the people you represent. And I'm very proud of a record where we have done that. Public service is more than elected office. Public service for me has also meant things like being a public school teacher before I was elected as a member of the House of Delegates. But what I can say is, as a member of the House of Delegates, and particularly as county executive, I am really proud of the ways in which we have led on big, challenging things and can very clearly articulate to a voter how that work here in Baltimore County can translate to Maryland's 2nd Congressional and can translate to action and results for the United States, whether it's taking action on things like gun safety and pulling together Republicans and Democrats to first in Baltimore County and then at the state level pass the SAFE Act to take guns out of the hands of would-be criminals by having higher security standards at our gun retail stores. You know, typically it's an issue that has really divided our country, but to be able to pull people together and find solutions. We've tackled things like a massive structural deficit in our budget together, again, with Republicans and Democrats. I have a council that's 4 Democrats and 3 Republicans. We've done that on issues of sustainability. We've done it on issues of public safety and education. And so I would say, as we talk about the record today, it's not just about the experience. It's also, can you point to what you've done with that experience? And I think candidates who are successful at, you know, making that pitch and that argument can also point to how you've delivered as, you know, a member of the House, county executive, or whatever role you may have had before. And it's a record that we're proud of and that we are running on.
In your career in politics, you've won elections, you've lost elections, you've won really, really close elections. In this particular election, you have a very close relationship with the person who is retiring, Dutch mm-hmm. Ruppersberger. Tell us if there are any ways in which you're holding that seat, if you win the primary and go on to win the general election, would differ from Dutch Ruppersberger, who's held that seat for 11 terms now, a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd say two responses there. First of all, is I've learned to never take a vote or an election cycle for granted. I've lost heartbreakers of an election. I ran for the state Senate and lost that by a few hundred votes. It was a very tough loss, but learned actually more from losing than I have from winning, candidly. I have won a primary for county executive by 17 votes, so we literally know that every vote matters. As we look around the YPR office, there are 17 or more people here that could have made the difference in that election. so we come at this from the perspective of really working hard for every single vote that we get. It is a very exciting prospect to be able to have the opportunity to potentially replace someone who is a friend and mentor in Dutch Ruppersberger. I would say, by and large, a lot of what Dutch has done is a model, I think, for what the congressman for the Maryland 2nd Congressional District should look like. And, I mentioned earlier sort of our bipartisan approach. I think we can compromise and find consensus without compromising our values. I think that's something Dutch has done. That's something I think I've done locally. I think someone who uses common sense, who focuses on issues that really matter to people, like our veterans. I will say the other thing we have in common is that Dutch and I both bring that local government experience. He actually was also county executive prior to being elected to Congress.
A very similar path.
That's right. And, I can say from everything from housing to homelessness and everything in between, having that on-the-ground experience is so important because we see how these federal policies affect us at the local level. We see how it impacts our communities. And it's one of the, I hope and I think, is one of the real big selling points to our candidacy. I will say, look, Dutch is a friend, but I do represent a new generation of leadership that would be going to Washington. So I do hope that there's a sense of invigoration and a renewed sense of passion about how we fix what is clearly a dysfunctional Washington. Washington, D.C. is broken. It is not, this is the least productive Congress maybe in the history of the United States in terms of legislation that's passed. What we thought was a very common sense or what should have been an easy passage of a border security legislation has sort of fallen apart because one person said he didn't like what Republicans and Democrats had agreed to. So having not, I think one person alone is not going to change the dysfunction. But having, I think, again, that sort of sense of a new generation who really brings a renewed sense of optimism and bringing that fight to break through the noise and break through the dysfunction. Again, it's something I think Dutch has fought for his entire career. But I think if there's one thing that's different, it's probably just sort of the generational aspect of it. And then again, sort of refreshing that local perspective. Issues change over years and decades. And so I think the other thing is, in a lot of ways, honoring the trail that he has blazed, but also bringing sort of a renewed and refreshed perspective to the work.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is my guest. He's running for Congress in the 2nd District. He's one of six candidates in the Democratic primary. Our email address here at midday@wypr.org. You entered politics as a very young man. You were 23 years old when you entered the House of Delegates in Annapolis. You're in your 40s now. What have you learned? I mean, the experience you've had as a legislator, as an executive, is one thing, but the perspective you've gained as a father, as a person who's just older than when you got in the game. Your dad was in the game. You grew up. You grew up in the game.
Yep.
As you look back on these last 6 years as county executive, what did you do wrong that you learned from?
I'd say two things have been the most profound in terms of my impact on being in the game, and the first one is when I got taken out of the game. I was very excited about the prospect of representing Southeast Baltimore County in the state Senate. I think most individuals across the state thought that I was going to win that race. And I didn't take that for granted. But if I'm being completely honest and transparent, and that's one of the things I'm most proud of in the work that I've done as county executive is, almost taking it for granted or letting the hype, sort of believing in the hype of what it is. And It was a very...
Yeah, reading your own reviews and believing them.
Or the reviews of others, even, mm-hmm. right? And it was a very humbling loss. It was a very tough thing for me. I will say both that experience sort of coupled with becoming a father about a year later to the date were the two probably most transformative things that happened in my life relative to public service. So that break from public service after serving almost 9 years in the House of Delegates and as a teacher, getting into the private sector, being a dad for several years was really perspective giving, both in terms of we shouldn't be defined by those roles. But also it really reminded me that it is a privilege and an honor to have the chance to make a difference. And so as I sort of ran for and was lucky enough to be successful for county executive, I learned that you shouldn't take the opportunity for granted and that you shouldn't read the hype or believe the hype. I think just sort of being as sort of authentic and transparent and real with people as you possibly can be, it's really how we've turned Baltimore County inside out, whether it's our town hall series where we've had thousands of people come out now and actually be engaged in our budgeting process. We had probably 150 people last night at a town hall, one of our 7 town halls, putting our budget online where people can see down to the check now where that's going, just being accessible generally and shooting people straight. We're not going to always agree. So whether that's working with a divided council or working with diverse communities, and I think the proof is in the pudding. You know, we won a very narrow race the first time, both in the primary and a tighter race in the general when I was first elected. And in the reelect last cycle, we were much more successful, not just in the primary, but also our margins grew in the general. And I think it's because people had a chance to experience that. And our approach has been sort of very much informed by those two experiences, I'd say, in particular.
You had a bill, a development bill that you suggested to propose to the county council. You mentioned there's 4 Democrats, 3 Republicans, so it's a slim majority of Democrats on the council. But the council said no, and you withdrew that proposal. So, you know, you had an idea, you proposed it, didn't fly, mm-hmm. You pulled back. How does that kind of experience, do you count that as a loss? Do you count that as... a diversion, you know, mm-hmm. that the path will end up in the same ultimate destination, but it's just going to get there a different way. I'm interested in the thought process and the philosophy that might inform your deliberations mm-hmm. as a possible voting member of Congress.
Yeah, I mean, I try to be a common sense leader, and I would say that compromise is not a dirty word. I come at the work both now as someone who has both legislative experience as a member of the General Assembly, also now executive experience as a county executive. And I'll just say, you know, before I get to the specific answer on that, like housing is a critical issue. It's one of the issues that I've made a priority as county executive. It will be a top priority for me as a member of the United States Congress if I'm fortunate enough to serve. In addition to recently announcing the largest housing deal, the largest attainable housing deal in Baltimore County's history, where we have several hundred units coming online, preserving affordability while uplifting the quality of apartments throughout Baltimore County. We're constantly trying to find ways to use market-based solutions to housing production. So the bill that we put in would have allowed for mixed-use districts within these designated nodes of shopping centers and other areas that are in dire need of reinvestment and reinvigoration. We put in a bill that would have allowed that to happen sort of by part of the development request process. It would not have guaranteed that developers or the private sector would have been able to do that. They would have had to gone through the process, including, you know, public meetings, development reviews, standards.
The process would have involved the county council a lot less.
That's right. We were asking the council to approve that in those particular areas. We heard loud and clear about their concerns. So I worked with Chairman Izzy Patoka to say, is there a compromise to be had here? And it turns out there was. And so we withdrew our bill in exchange for another piece of legislation pending before the council that basically affords council members the ability to provide those overlay districts in specific areas that they deem most appropriate. So probably not 100% of what we originally wanted, but I am very confident that members of the council are going to select some of those areas that we've identified in our master plan that had, you know, years of community input and review that was approved by the county council. But I'm confident we will see places where that mixed use approach, that, you know, reinvigoration of some of these areas will in fact happen. It will be council led and council driven. But that's the nature of politics. I've learned that we have to be willing to, again, without compromising our principles. And my principles are, I believe in mixed use. I believe in transit-oriented development. I also believe in having a strong development review process, including robust community input. But we got there. And that's what I'll do as a member of Congress, try to find those areas for compromise.
And the areas of compromise are few and far between. I mean, yesterday there was a vote that could lead to the banning of TikTok, which was ended up being 352-65. That's the first time that kind of thing has happened in the House of Representatives in a long time. You mentioned, you know, the least productive Congress, and Lord knows when, 749 votes and 27 bills passed in this last Congress. I mean, that's just, it's pitiful.
It's unacceptable. And, you know, it's not going to change until we have leaders who demand that we come together to find solutions. I don't expect that the next session, the next Congress here in the United States is going to be significantly Democratic or Republican heavy, regardless of the results across the country. So we need to have leaders on both sides of the aisle who are willing to say, look, here are my guiding principles. Here are things that I just can't agree to because of my belief systems. But there are ways to find solutions. I mean, the bipartisan infrastructure was a huge deal for the United States. And there are places like infrastructure where Republicans and Democrats can and should come together. The vote on TikTok, there are places where Republicans and Democrats can and should come together. Again, it's what we've done as an executive in Baltimore County, bringing together legislators of both political stripes to get things done. Sometimes we've had to do things, you know, that are a little more party line. We ended housing discrimination by source of income was one of the first acts I did. That was a largely Democratic vote in the county council. I believe there were some Republicans that supported it. We then passed that also at the state, just like the SAFE Act, as I mentioned, for gun storage. But, you know, it was always done in collaboration. I think even when Republicans don't vote for things for us in the council, they can't say or they wouldn't say that they're not engaged in at least the conversation in the process. And so, again, I've learned so many lessons, both as a member of the House of Delegates, but especially as someone who understands the executive mindset with that legislative perspective, which is why I think we've been so successful in the work here in Baltimore County.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is the Baltimore County Executive and a candidate in the Democratic primary for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. We'll have more with County Executive Olszewski on the other side of a quick break. You can join us on the phone, 410-662-8780, or on email, the address midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
I'm Al Waller.
I'm Catherine Collinson.
And I'm Mihaela Vince.
In upcoming episodes of Clear Path, Your Roadmap for Life, we'll discuss ways to catch up on retirement savings and the importance of self-care. Tune in to WYPR's website and mobile app, all major podcast platforms, and transamericainstitute.org.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. My guest will be Russell Contreras. He's the senior race and justice reporter for the Axios Latino newsletter. We'll talk about media coverage of Robert Herr's congressional testimony this week and new polling about Joe Biden's standing with people of color. Plus, J. Wynn Russick will review a show called Avaz at the Olney Theater. So that's on the way tomorrow. And if you've just joined us today, my guest is Baltimore County Executive Johnny Olszewski Jr. He is one of six candidates in the Democratic primary for the 2nd Congressional District. That's the seat that Dutch Ruppersberger, himself a former Baltimore County executive, has held for more than 20 years. Dutch Ruppersberger announced a few weeks ago that he is retiring from Congress at the end of this term. You can join our conversation with County Executive Olszewski, 410-662-8780. You can email us midday@wypr.org. So, Mr. County Executive, given the political polarity and the bifurcation of the tribes in American politics right now, what does success look like in Congress? If you're elected and, you know, 2 years later, what are you going to use as metric, as the metrics to decide whether you've done a decent job or not?
Yeah, and again, I think sort of Congressman Ruppersberger provides that roadmap for what success looks like. I failed to mention on the first segment, not only is it an honor to be running to replace the congressman, but to have his endorsement as someone who knows me well, as a good friend, and I think believes in my ability to continue on his incredible legacy of service. So I'd say, you know, first and foremost is constituent service. Are we responding to and being responsive to the needs of the sort of federal needs of our residents in District 2? Dutch has an outstanding constituent services team. I want to continue on that legacy, whether it's a passport request or, you know, a veterans VA benefit. Are we making sure that we're helping to navigate the people we represent through all of the federal agencies and bureaucracy? Experience I have as a member of the House of Delegates through state agencies, and again, as county executive with the Office of Community Engagement that we built, didn't exist before. A 311 system didn't exist before. So we feel very equipped to do that sort of work. I think secondly, a metric that I'm hoping to have success on is bringing together and finding those common sense solutions. One of the early examples of what Dutch passed was this Hero Miles. That was a bipartisan piece of legislation that allowed individuals to donate basically their frequent flyer miles to allow our heroes, our, you know, men and women in the service to be able to have the rest of their flights sort of paid for without having to come out of pocket after they've returned to a centralized hub. I think that leg home after getting to sort of say DC from abroad was a really successful example, a basic but a very successful example of being able to find those common sense paths forward. I think, you know, again, in housing is probably, we were talking about that in the first segment. That's a place where we have shown in Baltimore County we can get Democrats and Republicans on board as we think about this idea of attainable housing, which is not just, you know, the cheapest amount of affordability. Affordability is certainly an important part of a housing strategy, but also ensuring that it's of high quality, that it's near parks and good schools, that it's and access to jobs, and having that sense of uplift that we've been able to bring everyone to the table and say, okay, we're applying market-based solutions to have that uplift, to improve our housing stock, to meet the BCA goals in Baltimore County. I think that there are similar lanes in the Congress where we can say, okay, let's apply a similar approach as a member of Congress to find those goals and gains in what I fully expect to be a divided government again. And so that's the second metric I'd say. So first and foremost, constituent services, and then second, can we find those areas of compromise, consensus, and progress?
Let's talk about a couple of specific issues. Healthcare, reproductive healthcare is going to be certainly front and center for a lot of people. We have Vice President Harris actually visiting an abortion, a clinic that provides abortions today, the first president or vice president to ever actually go to a clinic that provides that service. The specter, the possibility of a democratically controlled Congress passing the codification of Roe, the Roe v. Wade decision, into federal statutes. How do you rate that, and how do you think, what should the Democrats' strategy be if, in fact, you're a majority party in the next Congress?
I'd say, first and foremost, to be clear, I believe that the decisions that a woman makes for her body are deeply personal and should be made between themselves in consultation with their provider. I fully support abortion access, both here in Maryland, and will also do so as a member of Congress. Politicians shouldn't be telling women what to do and what not to do. It's why in this role I testified alongside Senate President Ferguson. I also supported the House Speaker Jones in their legislation that put the opportunity to have abortion protected in the Maryland Constitution. That will be on the ballot, but literally sat at the table with the Senate President to support that legislation. We denounced the Roe overturning When it happened, along with state's attorney Scott Schellenberger, we were clear that any women who come to Maryland or Baltimore County for abortion access would not be prosecuted and would be protected here. So we're clear on our record in terms of where we are on that issue. But as a member of Congress, I think, you know, it's going to require Democratic control, I think, to sort of really move forward. We've seen time and time again, though, that when abortion is on the ballot, it wins. And it wins overwhelmingly often. It wins across the political spectrum. And so to the extent there are Republicans who are willing to, particularly around issues like IVF, which is, I know, controversial and out there as well, I want to invite them in to find ways to, you know, codify Roe as a national law of the land. It's something I'll fight for and push for as a member of Congress. But I do think that will probably require close to, if not an outright Democratic majority in both the House and the Senate, and frankly, a Democratic president. Because I think if President Biden is not reelected and you have a, you know, looks like a Biden-Trump, if there's a President Trump again, I do not see that bill being signed. I certainly think it will be vetoed. And there will not be a supermajority to overturn federal law. So, you know, I think in real ways, excuse me, abortion is going to be on the ballot, literally here in Maryland, but also across the country as people think about the fact that they no longer have access. I think that bodes well for Democrats, candidly, because I think we're right on this issue. And there are many Republicans who are still pushing in the opposite direction for a nationwide ban on abortion. And so, again, I think we have to step up. We have to codify Roe. We have to protect access to IVF. But I also want to keep open the door that there may be some Republicans. I'm hopeful there are some Republicans who come to the Congress, potentially as this new generation, and there's a lot of turnover happening and projected. I think we have to keep the door open to say, are there people who are willing to say, this is the right thing to do, and I'm willing to fight for it.
Many Republican candidates in this cycle, and it's not unlike previous cycles, have talked about the three big issues that they want to talk about the most. Abortion is certainly not one of them. Reproductive rights in general, not one of them. But they want to talk about crime, they want to talk about the deficit, and they want to talk about immigration. And these are, in fact, three things that are very top of mind for a lot of people. In our local elections, you know, crime has been the sort of number one concern of people. It's certainly a very important concern in the mayor's race here in Baltimore City. And it was an issue when you ran the last time as Baltimore County Executive. What is the role of the federal government when it comes to crime? What's the capacity, the possibility, the role of the federal government and federal statutes to improve public safety?
I think the federal government plays a key role, both in terms of policy and what is allowed and prohibited, but also in the resources the federal government provides. I'm very proud in Baltimore County. We've been leading on the issue of public safety, not just passing the SAFE Act and other measures. We've passed bipartisan police reform. We've invested more and more every year in the police department. I am not a defund the police Democrat. I'm a Democrat who believes both in supporting our law enforcement, but also in making those upstream investments in recreation and parks, in violence intervention and organizations like ROCA, in job opportunities, in, you know, supporting domestic violence prevention. And we've done all of that in Baltimore County, and we're seeing numbers continue to trend in a very positive direction. Homicides, just for example, were down 17% year over year, and almost 50%. And when you go back 2 years, that's true for almost most of our major crime categories. We've seen reductions. And I think that's truly a reflection of community-based, community-oriented support where we're both making those upstream investments and we're also supporting law enforcement. I think it has to be a holistic approach. It has to involve things like community schools and catching people young, preventing violence and crime in the first place, but also not being afraid to demand accountability on the back end. And so crime is absolutely one of the issues, and public safety is an issue that I hear regularly in this job. I suspect it will be true as a member of Congress, but again, those are the kinds of things I'll fight for there.
As Do you think the bills that are currently in front of the Maryland General Assembly are a move in the right direction? They haven't figured out the compromise yet. The conference is going to do that starting next week. But, you know, there's a House version and a Senate version of a Juvenile Justice Reform Act. Do you think, because there are plenty of people who say we don't need to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I'm also a data-driven leader, and I know both anecdotally, talking to Scott Schellenberger, talking to my police chief, talking to community members, that we do need to have some changes, and I applaud the House and the Senate for looking at it. I know they're working through the differences. I think wherever we land, it will represent a step in the right direction. We certainly don't want to create a record for juveniles and young people who are committing minor incidents. We don't want to set them up for failure for a lifetime, but at the same time, we can't excuse particularly violent behavior, and we have to find, I think, interventions and resources to hopefully divert young people early. But if we see especially violent or repeat violent offenses, there has to be accountability on the back end. So I think that the House and Senate are trying to strike that balance. I think whatever they pass will be a step in the right direction, and we've been at the table supporting those changes as well.
You mentioned recreation and parks. We have an email from Brent who's asking about changes to recreation and parks in the county. And Brent says the new process will reduce the influence and power of the community councils, and this process is, as designed, is bad for Baltimore County. So you're not going to be dealing with wreck and parks if you're elected to the Congress. But what happens when a constituent is just on the other side of an issue or of the other side of a decision you've made?
Yeah, I'll say this is an issue that we're very much in the early stages of talking about. So we've realized in recreation and parks that we've done a great job, historic investments, probably over $100 million in long overdue investments. We have also realized that we've both underfunded rec and parks in Baltimore County despite recent increases. But there are places where, for example, we're not following local or federal law. There are places where we're not following national best practices in recreation. So we are trying to make those modernizations and improvements. But I want Brett and anyone else concerned about that issue to know, as we've done with everything, we are setting up a work group with leaders of rec councils across Baltimore County. They are incredible partners. We're going to invite them in to sort of make sure that we're following both best practices and the law, but doing so in a way that minimizes the impact of the incredible work that both our rec councils and nature councils have done. So nothing is actually set. We're actually continuing to work through that process, and we want to invite stakeholders in to help inform those modernization efforts that, you know, frankly, we're overdue in pursuing, but again, it's just sort of how we try to approach things by inviting folks in. And we always do so with the best of intentions and, you know, a true, authentic desire to work together. And, you know, even with people who disagree at our town halls or, you know, in other sort of situations, we always want to try to find consensus where we can. I'm hopeful and confident that we can find a pathway forward where people like Brent can feel confident that we're making the right steps together.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is the county executive of Baltimore County. We're talking about his campaign for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. That's the seat that's currently held by Dutch Ruppersberger, who's held it for 11 terms. He will be retiring next January. We'll have more with Johnny O after a quick break, and you can join us. We'll talk foreign policy. We'll talk about voting rights. We'll talk about term limits. 410-662-8780 is our number. Our email, midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today is Johnny Olszewski Jr. He's the county executive of Baltimore County. That's Maryland's third largest jurisdiction. In 2022, after some speculation that he might run for governor, Mr. Olszewski ran for a second term as county executive, and with much greater name recognition than any of the five other candidates in the Democratic primary, he's considered the leader in that race for Congress in the 2nd District. District 2 encompasses parts of Carroll and Baltimore counties, as well as a little bit of Baltimore City. Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger has represented the district since 2003. He's announced his intention to retire when his term expires in January of next year. County Executive Olszewski is here with me in Studio A until the top of the hour. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So we have a question from Mark about Israel and Palestine and Gaza. He phrases it differently than I would phrase it, perhaps, but we'll use his phrasing. Where do you stand on Israel and Gaza?
Look, I'll say first and foremost, there are no easy solutions to what's happening in the Middle East. I will say that I believe very strongly that Israel is one of the most critical allies that the United States has in what is a very unsettled and volatile part of the world over in the Middle East. I am very hopeful that the U.S. can play a role in negotiating an end to the hostilities that we're seeing between Israel and Hamas. I very much support the calls from the administration, the Biden-Harris administration, to have a pathway forward, to have a ceasefire. I believe there was an agreement that Israel had agreed to that had not been agreed to by Hamas leaders. But here's what I know, that the attacks in October were brutal. They were savage. They were unacceptable. I believe firmly that Israel has both a right to exist and to defend itself. But I also, know that we have to make sure that we're doing, even in justified actions in response to the hostilities and the absolutely unacceptable actions on October 7th, that we are, even in response, following international law, doing all that we can to protect civilian life. And we have an obligation as a country to also ensure that humanitarian aid is getting through. As a parent, you sort of can see and understand both the horrificness of that attack, and you can also feel for people who are not involved in the conflict or not supporters of Hamas, a terrorist organization, who are still being impacted. So finding ways to get that humanitarian aid to those impacted individuals as well is also critical. So, as a member of Congress, we'll support the aid, but we're also going to support Israel and its right to defend itself, recognizing that how even war is conducted matters as well. So I'd say sort of in balance, that's how I would summarize my position.
Would you support aid with conditions to Israel? I mean, Bibi Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, basically says that in order to get the hostages back, Hamas will only respond to more aggressive military action. Others have said, no, the ceasefire is what will predicate the return of the hostages. Who's right?
I think, again, that's why, President Biden, I think, is trying to navigate a very delicate thread, a very delicate needle. And that's why I think and support the ceasefire proposal that they have put forward that hasn't yet to be accepted by both sides, again, is sort of an attempt to find that ceasefire, be a middle path forward, and is the kind of approach that, I think makes sense for the country. With these sorts of things, every day is a new situation in terms of what's happening on the ground. I want to see a cessation of hostilities. I would love to see a ceasefire. But we also have to make sure that we need to see a release of the hostages. We need to see a path forward. I fully support a two-state solution in the Middle East. And so, I look forward to being a part of the conversation. Should I be fortunate enough, there are no easy solutions, but I think that there are ways to find a pathway towards a ceasefire and to move towards that two-state solution.
You have a master's in public policy and a doctorate in, government, whatever it's called. I'm not sure. What's it called?
Public policy as well.
Public policy. So you've studied this as an academic. What committees would you hope to serve on, both as a freshman member of Congress, if you're elected, or later down the road when you have a little more seniority, assuming you get reelected?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've learned through my time as county executive is that, budgets are a reflection of our values. And so I have no illusions that it may happen as a freshman, but I would love to, follow in Dutch's footsteps and ultimately find my way to appropriations as a member of the Appropriations Committee, to whether it's, protecting our interests across the country or investing in community needs back home, make it to appropriations. It's a place where I think that you can make an awful lot of good. I mentioned, transportation and infrastructure as areas where I might be interested. I think infrastructure writ large is something that's critical for the future of our country and for the 2nd Congressional District. Also potentially interested in the committee with jurisdiction over housing, which I believe is banking and commerce. So I think there are actually a lot of great committees. I will gladly serve wherever placed, but sort of my priorities sort of moving forward, I think, are around budgeting and appropriations, housing, infrastructure, and so trying to find those assignments that align with those interests, but also being willing to serve and do whatever I can wherever ultimately we get placed.
And we should mention, by the way, when it comes to foreign policy, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, just this morning calling for new elections in Israel. There are those in Israel calling for new elections as well. We'll see how that plays out. We have a caller speaking of infrastructure. Alan is on the line from Timonium with a question for County Executive Johnny Olszewski, Jr. Welcome to the show. Hi, Alan. Are you there? All right. We'll try to get to Alan a little bit later, but as I understand it, he had a question about infrastructure. I want to ask you about voting rights. This is something that Congressman Sarbanes, who's also retiring like Dutch Ruppersberger, has been a huge champion of. How do you see the prospects for federal legislation concerning protecting voting rights that so many state legislatures have attenuated in one way or the other for a variety of methods?
Look, this is another important reason why I've chosen this moment to seek election to the United States Congress. I started my professional career as a social studies and special education teacher, primarily teaching American government. And so I spent the first part of my professional life teaching my students just how important and fragile our democracy is. I think that's been made abundantly clear through actions in the last election and in, as you mentioned, Tom, the changes since. I think Representative Sarbanes has a great sort of track record and model that I hope to sort of follow and support. I think our right to vote is what makes our democracy the best in the world, and it's we should be doing more to make it easier for people to vote. And I'm, you know, very excited about the example we've set in Baltimore County, again, partnering with members of the council to introduce legislation that makes it easier for people to have access, to have voting. You know, we have, for example, public financing of elections that will be in Baltimore County in the next election cycle for members seeking election to the council and as county executive. We believe that will allow more minority candidates, more women candidates to have access to the funds necessary to compete and be part of it. Our Board of Elections does incredible work. I'm so proud of their efforts. And, you know, we need to both protect their work, but also just make it easier for people to vote. We've done a lot of that here in Maryland, and that those are the kinds of pieces of legislation I'll fight for in Washington, including responding to the fallout of Citizens United and doing all that we can to overturn that decision from the Supreme Court as well.
And I'm told by the little voice in my ear that Alan in Timonium is, in fact, with us. Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm fine. Welcome to the show with County Executive Olszewski. What's your question?
Yeah, I admire his aspirations in following up with Dutch, and I'd like him to keep going forward with the Parks and Rec and the infrastructure tie-in. And I wanted to, I'm personally experienced with that area around the Mark Train and the Martin Airport area. And also the Timonium Road and Jennifer up to Jennifer Road, the I-83 exit ramps there. Just more pedestrian and bicycle friendly, how it needs to be in both of those sections.
All right. Thanks for the call, Alan. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan. I appreciate your call as well. And, you know, we're proud of we've made historic investments in infrastructure, more pay-as-you-go funding than I think ever before of any other county administration, not just in recreation and parks and the over $100 million there. But we have the first ever countywide bike and ped plan. There's hundreds of thousands of dollars to begin that work. We recognize we have more work to do, and that will require millions to fully implement that. But we finally have the first ever countywide plan, historic funding for our schools. This year alone, there's over $200 million in our capital budget for school construction. We've created this multi-year improvement plan for schools, which was a 15-year roadmap to spend over $3 billion. So we're building a new Delaney, a new Lansdowne, a like new Towson High School. We're making investments in roofs and windows and infrastructure across Baltimore County in a way that is equitable, in a way that addresses capacity, condition, and educational need. So again, our town halls, our openness, our planning, All are the kinds of sort of thoughtful, community-driven, community-inclusive approach that we want to take. But, you know, we have some, just like we have infrastructure challenges in Baltimore County, we have infrastructure challenges across this country. And so really that will be...
And we also have an infrastructure bill that's going to, you know, open up an awful lot of possibilities for improving.
But, you know, even with both the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure bill, that's only starting to really get at a backlog across this country. And so that hopefully is a building block for more investments. Again, it's one of the few places where we've seen Republicans and Democrats agree. Infrastructure in Baltimore County, we've had Republicans and Democrats agree. So I think starting, you know, this sort of gets to the breaking the logjam in Washington, starting in the places where it's much easier for us to agree, showing that we can do things together, and then sort of working towards those harder issues, I think is a roadmap for success.
You mentioned the capital improvements to three of the biggest high schools in Baltimore County. When it comes to federal involvement mm-hmm. in education standards, in methods of teaching and learning. You mentioned, of course, that you were a teacher before yep. you held elective office. What's the role of the federal government when it comes to, you know, national standards for educators here in Maryland and around the country?
Yeah, look, I have a track record of pulling in parents, of working with our labor unions, of working with the school system, the school board members. Superintendent Rogers has been a great partner. You know, we have to pass legislation that is collaborative. I mean, federal law sets is sort of the North Star in terms of where we're going, in terms of education policy, accountability, testing. We can't continue to be knee-jerk. I mean, teachers get one set of curriculum or one set of standards. We have to be thoughtful and deliberate and evidence-based about what's working. And so what I'll say is, as we sort of think about the roadmap for education policy, I'll bring those perspectives as a classroom teacher, as a state representative, as county executive to bear. But I think we also have to listen to people who are doing the work. We have to listen to the administrators, to the teachers, to the support staff. And that whole sort of education ecosystem, so that we are, in fact, you know, getting results for what have been historic investments, including our own local investments, the largest increase in this year's budget from both a percentage and a dollar increase in the county's history. But also for federal investments, the federal government plays an important role. A lot of the policy is tied to the funding that the federal government provides, and you know, we want to be thoughtful, but again, I think inclusive and ensuring that the people doing the work, the superintendents, the school boards, the teachers are at the table.
We didn't get a chance to talk about immigration too much, but we will talk about that on another occasion. There are several other issues I'd love to bring up, but we are out of time. I appreciate your time today, and we'll see you out there on the trail.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is the county executive of Baltimore County and a candidate for Congress in the Democratic primary in the 2nd Congressional District. The election is on May 14th. Early voting begins on May 2nd. You have until April 23rd to register by mail or online if you are not yet registered to vote. And if you're not, please get out there and get registered. It couldn't be more important that you participate in this great sacred rite. Again, Election Day, May 14th, that's the primary day. Election Day and the general election will be in November. So that's it for us today. And coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll talk politics and media with a reporter from Media Matters and Russell Contreras of the Axios Latino newsletter. Plus, J. Wynn Russick will review a show called Avaz at the Olney Theater. And coming up now, it's Here and Now, which is on the way after news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us on the radio. Thanks for being with us online. Thanks for subscribing to our podcast and checking us out on the WYPR app. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.